Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. It's been quite a busy week, and it's going to be a busy week next week, Stone.
Good morning, sir. It certainly has. We had a lot of fun in Raleigh, got a chance to meet up with some old friends and make some new ones in the startup community at CED Tech Venture 2013. That was a lot of fun. But then next week, Sunday morning, you and
bright and early.
Yeah.
Set your alarm.
That's right. Me, you, Warren, we are in the plane and on our way to San Francisco for Oracle Open World.
That's right. Broadcasting live from one of the booths there. I think they expect 70,000 attendees. It's going to be quite a show.
Well, you're quite the draw.
Well, you know.
Well, this is going to be a fantastic segment on Atlanta Business Radio this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Russell Longcore. He's no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone. Looking forward to catching up with him. We're going to talk with Nir Levy and Spencer Barkoff. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Vice President Business Development with Kellam Communications. Please join me in welcoming to the show Miss Lydia Wilbanks. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. VP Business Development for Kellam Communications. How do you spend your days? What do you do?
I spend my days thinking about what a great company I work for and sharing that information with anyone who'll listen.
So mission and purpose for Kellam, what are you guys out there doing for folks?
We are a top 10 PR and communications marketing company in Atlanta. And an old company, about 60 years old, with offices, four offices in the U.S., two in Europe. And we focus on helping companies build their brand, extend their marketplace, and increase their business. So it's a great company. I am new to Atlanta. I just moved here from Birmingham.
Yeah, what compelled that move?
Well, I'm from New Orleans, and I'm a former New Yorker, and I really want to get back to the big city, big southern city, like Atlanta.
So now, what's the business community like in Birmingham?
Well, it is Birmingham is actually top 50 market, and a little over a million people in the metropolis between Birmingham and Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very southern city. But it's defined by its steel background, a lot of steel companies, coal, and so with a strong manufacturing base. I had a PR agency in Birmingham. And
it was your own agency?
It was my own agency. And I had the agency for about 10 years, built it up. But I really, I started feeling like I lived in a business community defined by a body of water around me,
uh-huh.
You know, so so I really wanted to get into a bigger market, and that's why Atlanta seems so appealing.
So now, could you talk a little bit about how PR has evolved over the last few years? Because I have a degree in advertising that I got in the 80s.
How come you always get that worked into the conversation?
It's all about me.
It's very relevant.
Are you looking for work? What are we doing here?
Well, she got a job there. Maybe there's an opening. But PR and advertising were together at one point, and advertising was the more dominant one, and PR was kind of secondary, at least for me. And now it seems that PR has surpassed advertising with the advent of social media. It seems that PR is more of a logical partner with social media than advertising. Can you talk about the evolution a little bit?
You know, I started my career in PR and then moved into more traditional forms of marketing, and now I'm sort of coming back into it. PR has always been dominant in terms of setting the message.
Mm-hmm.
We used to call it the nail, and advertising was the hammer.
Uh-huh.
But with, you know, and that's a very sophisticated approach to branding. Companies like Starbucks and Red Bull built their brand with no advertising,
right?
Just through PR. But you're right, advertising is an easier method of marketing because you can see, feel, touch, and taste it, which you really can't with PR. Social media has changed that and made PR something that's much easier where ROI is concerned. And on the PR side of the table, we believe that social media is inherently and from the beginning a PR tool. Because it's all about the message.
Right, and a communication, like a dialogue rather than a monologue.
Exactly, that's exactly right. And I think that advertising has also gotten so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the Super Bowl ads. I mean, it's gotten crazy. And you really have to have, to move the needle through advertising, you just have to have an incredible
budget. Very large
budget,
right.
You really do. And even then, companies like Coca-Cola and McDonald's, they've millions and millions of dollars in advertising just to keep the needle where it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that PR is a tremendous alternative for companies who want to build brands but don't have the money to advertise, or even companies like McCormick & Schmick's, a former client of mine. They did no advertising. They just built their brand through PR. So mm-hmm. Sometimes it has to do with the company itself.
Like the culture and philosophy of the company?
Yes. Very much so.
Now, do you get asked, particularly early in the conversation, a lot about how you measure, how you communicate, how you monitor ROI? Do you get that question a lot with your new clients?
Not so much, because I think that when you move into the PR field, you know that ROI is difficult to establish.
Mm-hmm.
PR is sort of like getting into a marriage. You know, you only can really look at it in hindsight, but it's about a relationship between you and your audience.
That's the clip, Kevin. Make sure you capture that. That's the clip.
But over the...
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
No, absolutely it makes sense. But when at the time, PR used to be, I'm going to send out a press release, or if there's a crisis that my PR person is going to help manage it. And now it seems that there's more of an active, ongoing, day-to-day operational role for PR for a lot of companies.
Oh, no question about it. Because we have tools now that we can engage our audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before social media, PR was press releases and relationships with the media.
Right.
So the primary target was always MediaCorp.
Right.
But today, with social media, you're engaging hourly sometimes.
Right. And it could be an individual person that has 10,000 Twitter followers.
Well, we often say that, you know, the beginning is finding out what your audience is saying about you.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a monitoring aspect to
your
business.
Yes, absolutely. And then finding out if they're not talking about you, why aren't they?
Right.
Right? So you need to know what they're saying and whether they're saying anything. And those are two different venues, because if they're saying something negative about you, you have to go in and deal with it and manage that. If they're not saying anything about you, you have to start a conversation.
Right.
And it's almost one by one. It's like one customer at a time. It's real. We live in an incredible time.
Right. But it's almost the inverse of what it used to be. Like, it used to be more mass-oriented.
Yes, that's true.
And now it's almost micro-oriented, like you said, to the individual, almost custom conversations per individual.
But it was always one reporter at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to that extent, the audience, you know, if you break your audiences down and however many you have, but the audience now is almost like one reporter at a time all over the place, because
right.
we have so much power as a consumer,
mm-hmm.
you know, to interrupt brands or to change brands. And because companies are listening, but the relationship between the reporter and the company is still paramount. I mean,
right.
there's no question about it. So that really hasn't changed. It's just that we're busier today.
a lot more outlets.
That's true. And a greater need for, as you say, monitoring. You
mm-hmm.
you just can't turn a blind eye anymore to what your consumer says about you. The relationship is perhaps not as complicated as it is with a reporter, but it's challenged that relationship, which is so interesting to me, because reporters at one point, writers like yourselves, used to hold all the power. You know, the power of the pen, the power
right.
of the typewriter, the power of the microphone.
Yeah, we don't have any power. That's for sure.
You know, today the consumer holds...
Yeah.
Right, they're the ultimate
power. They really are. And so Though you are the gatekeeper in many ways to that consumer, they do have more opportunities to kind of knock on the door, if you will.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, I understand that you launched the startup internet company, so you're kind of on both sides of the table.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, talk about your experience with that and what got you compelled to do something crazy like that.
Well, it was crazy. I got to tell you, sometimes I think, what was I thinking? You know, I'm glad no one told me how hard it was going to be because I wouldn't have done it.
No one leads with that.
Right. Well, the startup world is a tremendous world, and I decided that this country needed a magazine for Southern women, and that...
Like a paper magazine?
No, an online magazine.
Online magazine.
So it's called Haute Pink, H-A-U-T-E. And it is, we launched it 2 years ago, not quite about a year and a half ago. And it is...
So now you're the media.
So now I'm the media. Yes, I am. It's been an interesting experience. So we push several times a week, and we talk about fashion and food and all things fabulous in the South. For people who are either born here, live here, or wish they were here. And it has a strong Southern sensibility. And as a former New Yorker, I've always been fascinated with the difference between the South and the North. And the Southern community is still very unique to any place else in this country. And I thought I really think and thought that it needed a magazine all of its own.
I want to know more about this. What do you find to be the differences? I mean, is it the...
Well, it's funny. It's very mercurial. It's very hard.
He doesn't know what that means.
You know, it's almost like what the Supreme Court said about pornography. I can't tell you what it is, right, but I know when I see it. The South is a community that leads by feeling, more so than any other community I know of. We tend to be not only more touchy-feely, but we tend to express our emotions more, both in business and in personal relationships. I'll never forget the first time one of my first clients, a banker in Birmingham, after a meeting, told me he loved me. And I thought, oh, my God.
Wow.
He's got a wife. I don't know what that means. But he and after that, he would tell me all the time, love you. You know, that is a that would never happen
that
in New York City.
It doesn't happen in New York now.
It does not happen in New York City.
Maybe and on the subway, but not in a business setting.
Right, right. No, it was it's so casual here, affection, both for spoken and shown. And so we definitely are much more feeling culture. We also tend to like color more. That Southern women wear more color than any consumer in the country. She also wears more perfume and more makeup. And I think our women are more beautiful than any place in the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, what's some of the stories you've had coverage? Like, what have you talked about in some of the issues?
I just covered Jeffrey's fashion show here, which was a first since I'm a new resident of Atlanta. But we cover Southern writers and their books. We cover... we'll cover Fashion Week in New York, but we do it from a Southern sensibility, so we'll talk about prints, because Southern women love prints. We may focus on prints more than anything else. We tend to kind of use our prism to look at what's around and aggregate content for a very Southern viewer or reader.
What's the rhythm? How often does it come out?
We post about 5 or 6 news stories a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we really churn our content, and we push twice a week to our subscriber. And it's called HotePinkBham.com.
And so what's your experience like? Is it funded by advertising? Or
well, that's a whole other conversation. We are a multiple revenue business model, so advertising is our primary source of revenue, but we also do promotions, and we help companies get a better we help them come online. We help them with their own online presence. And we do that in a variety of ways that are seen and unseen, principally through editorial coverage. But funding in Alabama is a very difficult thing. Alabama spends 75% of their venture capital on companies outside of the state.
That's interesting.
And very sad, let
yeah,
me tell you.
Not a, mm-hmm. I don't
it's
know,
not a good thing.
Good, not a good long-term strategy.
No, it's not. And the startup community, as some of your guests will be able to speak about, the startup community in Alabama is getting better, and as I think it is countrywide. I know Atlanta has a tremendous startup community mm-hmm. here. But online startups today are not what they were 5 years ago. And it's a competitive market to raise funds in.
Now, in Alabama, is it just Birmingham, or does Huntsville have a startup community there, or
Huntsville
is there pockets?
Has a, and Birmingham has a startup community very devoted to biotech and medical. Mm-hmm. Huntsville's startup community is very devoted to not so much medical, but engineering, science. They have a more diverse startup, but still, they're not really in the consumer startup.
Right.
We are the only female fashion online magazine startup in the state of Alabama.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. It's
you're
not a class
one.
I want to be
number
alone
number one.
In. Yeah, right. I'm the only one. Yeah, and that tells you a lot about funding for fashion online magazines.
Are you self-funding it then?
Or no, we were seeded, uh-huh. And we're in the process of raising
more money.
First round funding. Yes.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's interesting. You that gives you a different perspective from being a PR professional as well. I mean, you can see both sides of the equation there.
I have tremendous respect for companies that have, particularly tech companies, that mm-hmm. have gotten large, because pulling a company up out of the ground is one set of abilities, and running and building a company is another.
Right.
Right. It's two very separate skills. And for one person to do both of those things is unusual, unique,
right.
and tremendous. So I'm still in a wait and see whether I can do it or not.
So I want to talk more about the PR side of things. Tell me more about the work. Walk me through, I guess you'd call it an engagement cycle. So if you were beginning to work with a client, what do you do in the early stages? How does that
Well,
work?
I'll tell you about a new client that we just brought on. Fascinating. It's a tech company. They have created a dog collar that only requires your iPhone. So you can create parameters either just around yourself. You can create parameters within your home, within your yard. You can go hiking with your dog at your side with a moving parameter around yourself.
Oh, wow.
So it has like a force field that keeps
your
dog close?
Sweet.
They use...
Does it work with children?
It does. The question is, do you use the shock or the vibration, right? So it's a type of bone-to-muscle technology that vibrates in the collar that teaches the dog instead of using shock therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it is brand-new technology. It's by a company called Wolf Tech. And
are they local here?
No, they're out of Alabama. Huh? They are, outside of Birmingham. And their product is coming to market in about a month. They're in field testing right now, but it totally disrupts the contained dog.
Right. Yeah, this is a game changer.
It's a major game changer because you can use it not only for, you can imagine you can apply it to horses, cattle.
Right.
You can use it in real estate. It becomes a much bigger market almost instantly. But their first product is this dog collar called Dog Lock.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the first things that we've done in our engagement is really to study the market, is to study the audience, and to try and create pockets of audiences, and to really understand. You have the dog lover, you have the dog owner, which may or may not be the same person in terms of how they interact with their dog.
Right.
You have dog enthusiasts who may or may not have a dog. And the audiences move on from there. And so we try and separate our target markets into as many audiences as we can. And from there, we talk about the engagement of the audience. So what does the dog owner need to hear from us in order to learn about the collar and eventually buy it? And that really is at the heart of PR. It is engaging the audience and causing a reaction, a reason to buy, if you will. And it's simple. in discussion, but it's actually requires a tremendous amount of discipline and knowledge in order to bring about an action. And the action is we want them to buy the collar. So how do we do that? In this case, we will use advertising to build the brand because we have to, you know, being in the internet business, the question is how will your customer find you?
Right.
It's a big World Wide Web out there. So we always believe that it's usually combination, advertising, social media, and direct PR.
Right. So you're not just everything's got to fit into the PR umbrella. You just want to solve their problem the best way.
That's
that
exactly
needs to be
right. And I believe in pay-per-clicks. I think that Facebook, Google are great opportunities for branding and advertising, but it's really marrying that in with PR, and it's the blend of all those disciplines together that makes
now,
a difference.
How did you create that initial conversation with this company? Like, you know, there's lots of PR companies out there. What's kind of the secret sauce for you guys that enable, you know, that help him choose you guys?
Well, we happen to be very good both in the technology sector. And we happen to be very good with consumer brands. Kellen has an entire side of its company that is one of the world's largest association management companies.
And what is an association management company?
Think about professional associations, trade organizations, or things like the we have the National Candle Association.
Okay,
we
so there's a National Candle Association.
Yes.
And then your firm runs that association on behalf of, like, there's probably volunteers that are part of it,
so
but you guys are doing the
We act as executive
part,
director.
Right?
Yes, exactly. So we have 80 of those.
Really?
Yes.
All over the country or
all
world?
All over the world. All over the world.
Wow.
And
how'd
we
you guys get into that? It's kind of...
It's
a weird
unique.
Little niche. I mean, it's not a little niche, it's a big niche.
Company started as an association management company. And what happened was the executives within, for example, we have the Calorie Counting Association.
There's an association for calorie counting.
It is. And as you can imagine, the members of that association
care a lot about calorie counting.
They do. And they care a lot about sweeteners, artificial sweeteners.
Right.
And so those companies on those boards, such as Sweet and Low, turned around and said, you know what, you're doing such a great job in your association, we want you to handle our PR. So we became a PR agency.
Kind of by accident.
By accident.
Right.
We did, out of well-defined need. So we are very strong in the consumer area, as you can imagine, with companies like Sweet and Low and Coca-Cola and
right.
as clients.
But everything, it just makes, or it organically happened. It was a logical
yes.
kind of next step.
That's exactly right. And we ran the PR for these associations, so we already had the capability within the house.
Do you like do their events and conferences as well?
We have an entire meetings division that is
really?
Devoted to running
just
meetings
for that.
Around the world. Yes. A huge meetings division. That's mm-hmm. probably almost, a fourth of the company is running these meetings.
Wow. So when you enter your offices, like, are there different areas for each of the specialties?
They are. We have almost an entire floor, and it is broken up into the individual aspects. We have an entire digital division, for example, that builds the websites or mm-hmm. updates the websites for all these companies. And these associations, which is how they communicate with each other often.
Are there is there a candle cube where that person's the candle person? Then next to him could be the
some of our
the calorie people?
Yeah, sort of. Well, yeah. some of our executive directors are executive directors on more than one association.
Oh, wow. Even better. So they got to really be able to change gears.
For example, we're in the formula business, right? So we handle the largest infant formula association.
Uh-huh.
That person also might be in the salads and dressings.
That is a versatile individual. Wow.
But there's never a dull moment, I'm sure, in your office.
Yeah. Very unique. It's a very unique company. And so they really understand the whole communication side from trade to consumer.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, you got an awful lot going on. Let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you. There's a lot that they could be talking to you about.
That's right. We have a lot to talk about.
About the magazine or the PR work.
If you're an association, you probably are looking for associations.
Right.
And then
anybody
that's got a PR or a marketing need.
Absolutely. Right. So what's the best way for them to reach out and have a conversation with you?
My email is lwilbanks@kellencompanyspelledout.com. And of course my office number.
Sure.
678-303-3004.
And then the website for the company is kellencommunications.com.
Yes, or Kellen Company.
Or either one?
Yes.
And then they can find whatever. I'm sure you got lots of information on
that
website.
Yes, and hopefully all your listeners are going to log on to Hot Pink.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and what's the URL for that?
That is HAUTEPINKBHAM.com.
Now, on that, do you do events too, or is that just the online
Not
magazine?
Not yet, but we will.
But that's coming, right?
Yeah, we talk about a lot of events. Mm-hmm. So
That seems like a logical extension.
Yes, yes, it is.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. We got to have you back. There's too much to talk about. Well, I think it might be fun maybe to bring an executive director or maybe like
one of the associations.
Association board or something and just do like a dedicated segment. You'd be up for that?
That'd be very cool.
All right, yeah.
Tell me when.
Yeah, all right. Sounds like fun. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I'd love to.
Okay, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us again, because he has been with us before, backed by popular demand, let's put it that way, Mr. Russell Longcore. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Stone. How are you?
Well, I knew you were in a festive mood. You got the Hawaiian shirt on. That's
selling a lifestyle. This is how I dress all the time.
So tell us what you're up to, man. You've shifted gears a little bit since the last time we talked.
I did shift gears a little bit. My insurance claims practice is kind of on the back burner because something that came up very recently. I got involved in something that is called a customer loyalty program through a European company that's just coming to the United States. This is disruptive technology that I've never seen before, and I've never seen it displayed or deployed in this manner.
How does it stack up against this moving dog collar thing?
Yeah.
Is it that disruptive?
I don't think
that thing blew me away.
That's a wonderful – by the way, Lydia, wonderful presentation. You did a great job. You're a great pro.
Thank you.
It was good to listen to you. This is completely different. We are going after small business. We're trying to rescue small businesses nationally, really in any country that this company is in. And the company's name is Flexcom. That's spelled FLEXKOM. Flexcom is a company that is headquartered in Germany. They are wildly successful in Europe and the UK. And they're just now coming to the United States to come into this market, which is arguably the largest consumer market on the planet. Their mission is to, as I mentioned, save small businesses and rescue many small businesses. And here's the reasons. Small businesses are in trouble today. They have four things that basically make them have so much trouble. Number one is regulation and taxation. That just kills small business. The second one is, whether you like it or not, it's Obamacare. That's coming. It's going to change. It's already starting to change small and medium-sized businesses. Number three, the big box stores. All they're about, if a big box store comes to town, the little businesses start to close up. Always happens, never going to change. And finally, internet marketing is taking market share away from small businesses. And even if a small business develops their own website, how are they going to be found? If it's a dry cleaner and he's on the corner and he puts, you know, Joe's dry cleaner, and somebody goes to the Google's dry cleaning, they're going to get 40 million.
Your buddy over there, he bought candy bars on Amazon just yesterday, right?
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. So it's your fault.
I couldn't find them in the regular store.
Well, you didn't go to
the O'Henry
store.
The O'Henry bar is very difficult to find.
But
just
no, it
FYI.
Is. It can be harmful, right?
It's really tough for the business. Even if a business wants to go into internet marketing, unless they make a real serious financial commitment for search engine optimization, nobody's ever going to find them, and so that money is just kind of wasted for them. So it's a real problem for small business, and small businesses are closing daily because they're just they're just getting beaten up.
All right, Russell, you're scaring people now.
Okay, well, you know, in
so how do you fix it?
In the old church, they always said you got to get them lost right. before you can get them saved,
right? That's right.
So we got to know that there's a problem out there. But businesses want three things, basically. They want more customers. They want to keep the customers that they have. And they want their customers to come back and do more business with them. And that's true for – it doesn't make any difference if you're in Herzegovina or you're in Thailand or if you're in the United States. That's what small business wants. And so we're about customer acquisition. That's what this is about, customer acquisition and retention. And I'll give you – everybody likes to have something to pigeonhole so that they can understand something. And this is being disruptive technology. Let me give you something to compare it to. Compare it to – The Visa card. Everybody, most all of us have a Visa card in our wallet. Now, 40 years ago, a lot of people didn't have a Visa card in their wallet. And even large business like Waffle House, it was only about 5 years ago that Waffle House actually started taking credit cards at all.
Right.
So even in this day, very, very close to where we are, there have been large chains that did not want to be involved in that for whatever reason, but now they are. Well, so you could literally take today, as opposed to 40 years ago, you could take your single Visa card and you could start from your house. You could pay for a cab to get to the airport. You could pay for your ticket. You could go anywhere on the planet. You could pay for your meals. You could pay for your lodging. You could pay for everything with one card instead of carrying a whole bunch of cards. The Flexcom customer loyalty program is just that. Compare one card to having a whole bunch of them. And most of us, if we've ever done business walking through a big box store or Kroger or someplace, somebody's going to say, do you have your card with you when right. you get to the when you get to checkout? Most of the time, I mean, I've got a drawer at home that has all my customer loyalty cards in it because it's such a pain to use. Now, the one card that I carry is Kroger. I love Kroger. Because I'm there maybe four times a week.
We're going to have to send them an invoice.
Well, probably. But I'm there all the time. I present it all the time.
Right,
they do a great job, and I buy all my gas there. But it's the only one I carry. Because all the rest of them are just – I don't want to carry another wallet just for my customer loyalty and rewards programs because that's crazy. But I know lots of the females that have a big purse and all that stuff's in the bottom, so they can do that. That's fine. But I just can't do that. But
overarching loyalty program.
Well, it's an overarching loyalty program to say this. Most of the loyalty programs that you'll find, no matter what merchant it is, whether it's a big box store or somebody that's small, are all silos. You know, they don't talk to one another. I can't take my Kroger card and walk next door to the dry cleaning place and present it and say, please give me some discounts because
right.
it's just not going to work. They'll look at me like I got two heads because it doesn't work that way. The Flexcom system does work that way because instead of having all of these individual customer loyalty programs that are all over your town and all over your state and all over the country and in other countries, you have one. So the merchant can give out and I keep going back to this disruptive technology, but it's mobile commerce. It's the QR code that is coming to the fore right now. A merchant can give away these things for free, and then the merchant can give discounts to the customer. The app is free for the customer, no matter who it is. They can take it to any participating Flexcom retailer. They can shop for clothing and milk and bread and gasoline and everything that they normally do in their day of buying stuff. If they're buying it at a participating Flexcom merchant, they get cash back on their card, on their account. They also get points that they can get rewards for sometime in the future.
And this is all on one app.
It's on one app. One.
So, Lee, you use these things. Are you buying into this thing? Or do you find this attractive?
How do you get all of the retailers to participate?
Yeah, how do you what's the sales and marketing side of this thing like? Is that hard, or they look at you like you're crazy and, oh, no, we already got that?
Well, so far, we're just in the process in the United States of rolling this out. So there's three phases when they go into any country. First phase is build a sales organization of Flexcom guys and gals. So we go out and build this organization of people that take this to the merchants. So mm-hmm. that's first, and that's what we're doing right now. Secondly, in the European, I can only speak to what they do there. In the second phase, the Flexcom sales force goes out and just gives away thousands of these apps to people because it's free. And why would you not take this if you knew you were going to get cash back?
Right.
The third thing is, once we've got the hundreds of thousands of customers that are out there looking for a way to use this card, we start going to the merchants and say, okay, here, you know, we've got 3,000 or 300,000, a million, whatever it is, and they've got about 5 million customers in Europe right now. Here are all these customers looking for a place to do business. Now, if you have one of the terminals, which is basically like a mini iPad on a pedestal, you can give somebody the Flexcom app. You can give them cash back that goes on their account. They can take it literally next door to another Flexcom merchant and spend that money to lower their bill or buy whatever they're going to do. They can do that. So the benefit for the customer is cash back and points. They can use it anywhere. They can use it in their day-to-day shopping. I don't care what somebody buys. If they're buying it at a Flexcom retailer, that the merchant, if Stone, if you were the merchant and you gave me one of these QR code little apps, that's going to total up. You're going to make money every place else that I shop in town, in the state, in the world. And at the end of the month, Flexcom is going to send you a check for a few cents per customer. Now, let's say you have 1,000 customers and you give away 1,000 apps. And all of those folks just go out and do the normal stuff that they do. We're not trying to change anybody's buying habits. We're not trying to feature any particular product. They just go out and do the normal stuff that they do now, but they do it at Flexcom retailers. And at the end of that month, you, the retailer, are going to get a check from Flexcom for a few cents per customer per month. And so for the guys like me, how many stores do you want to
And it doesn't enroll? Take very many before you are living a lifestyle of Hawaiian shirts.
Hawaiian shirts, hopefully with my toes in the sand.
No, it sounds very exciting. What's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more? They should reach out to you, or is there a website, or what's the best way for them to contact you?
Because we're so new, I would suggest a couple of things. I would suggest, number one, that someone had a passing interest in this, just go to Google and go to YouTube and put in these words, and it's a phrase: the best Flexcom presentation to date. Just look for that. It's about a 20-minute presentation.
And it's you?
No, it's
Are
not
you
me.
The best?
It's
a, oh,
no,
you're not the best.
No, it's a friend of mine named Christopher, and he did this just in the last couple of days.
Okay.
It's an outstanding presentation. The best way to get a hold of me is at my email address, which is russlongcore, RussLongcore @gmail.com. And if you want to find out more about you about Flexcom in the United States, go to www.us.flexcom, FlexCom. .com.
All right, man. Thank you.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. You going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, I'm really interested to hear what these guys are doing. This is exciting.
I love talking to these startup guys. All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from Campus Bubble, Mr. Nir Levy and Spencer Barkoff. Welcome to the show. Talk to me, Nir. What's this Campus Bubble all about?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Have you learned anything so far?
What's that?
Have you learned anything so far? I thought I saw you taking some notes, or were you just prepping your...
No, I was writing some notes down. I'm learning a lot about social media, and I think really disruptive technology and social media is going to really change our future. It's exciting.
Well, we met you guys at Startup Riot. You were at Emory at the time. You still at Emory?
We just graduated.
Ah.
So
now
in
you're in
ways,
the real world.
The real world. And in many ways, we're not at Emory, but very much we're still with Emory because the whole project is really an interesting new way for sort of – Emory has really enabled us as alumni to build a business. So it's exciting.
Well, you'll stay on their list, and the more successful you get, the more mail you will get from Emory. Trust me on this.
Trust me. We already get daily emails.
So why don't you share a little bit about what you guys are up to?
Yeah, so Campus Bubble is a platform for everyone's academic identity. So just like LinkedIn is for your professional identity or Facebook is for your social identity, Campus Bubble is for your academic identity. And really with large communities like universities, there is this growing problem of community members getting fragmented across all these new platforms that are coming out. So like Facebook, you know, LinkedIn, everyone's getting spread out, and really there's no way for the people at the top of a community to make sure that the message is getting out there. So how are students learning about events? How are teachers communicating with their students?
So like it would be an Emory-centric bubble?
So we're making we're taking the Emory bubble and building a social network just for it that only Emory's community members could get into.
And then so you can keep out, you know, like Georgia Tech people. You don't want them there, right?
We don't like them.
So now, so do you test it at Emory?
Yeah, so we did an initial beta test over the summer, and just this past August 23rd, so today marks pretty much the 1 month since launch date.
Okay, so now how many students are there at Emory?
So there's 13,000 members in our database right now.
Now how many are in the bubble?
So everyone is integrated into it. So the interesting thing we were able to do is integrate with the university system.
So they were okay.
So it's baked in from day one.
So you had to get the university on board.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that conversation like?
So that was a bureaucratic process, to say the least.
It was probably simple. You just made one call, and then you told them your idea. Yeah, they said, sure, here's the list of all our students.
Something like that.
Roll it out.
So this actually started as a class project.
That was smart right there.
Yeah,
now it's not you. Nice. I'm doing it for a class. I have to ask you this.
Exactly. So we were in an entrepreneurship class in the business school, and we built the business plan around this idea. And the teacher at the end of the project said, are you guys going to continue this? And we kind of looked at each other and said, no, absolutely not.
Are we going to get any credit?
Yeah, exactly.
Is this going to help my grade?
What's our grade? And then we just continued. We started to present this to participants all across campus, alumni, students, admissions, the deans, and got a lot of letters and eventually got the opportunity to present to the board of trustees, which led to funding from the university to continue with this.
Oh, so the university kicked in some money for you guys to keep working on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't happen very often in school. I don't remember that ever happening to me.
The Facebook movie has an interesting scene where they go to the president of Harvard and they're like, help us out. And he's like, none of my business.
Yeah, sure. Jump right on that.
So I want to wheel this thing back a little bit because we met at Startup Riot.
Right.
Talk to us a little bit about that experience and what impact, if any, just hanging out with folks like that has had on this thing.
I think the Atlanta startup community right now is extremely promising. So the Startup Riot has been an event that's been going on for 4 years maybe. I've been involved for like 3 years and finally mustered up the courage and got Spencer to present then.
Yeah.
And the whole networking opportunity was extremely insightful. Not only did we meet potential investors and even like a patent lawyer that taught us some stuff just then and there, but it was just a great opportunity to really be inspired about to see what's possible. And, for us, it's like we need to see that people our age are able to pull it off to try it ourselves.
Now, what's been the most rewarding thing for you guys so far? Like you had this idea in a class and it was kind of probably like a goof at some point. You were like, yeah, that sounds good. And you were, it slowly evolved, right? It wasn't like all of a sudden now you guys are millionaires, right?
No, not yet.
I think really the most interesting thing we've learned is previously we sort of did this as summer projects, different versions of it as summer projects, and then we release something, and then when summer's over, it's like back to classes.
Right.
And so now for the first time we've launched something, and it's constantly evolving. We're updating it every 48 hours. New people are checking it out all the time. We're running focus groups, and we're really very intrinsically involved with the community on a continuous basis. And seeing people sort of feed off of us is really exciting.
When did the moment happen where you're like, hey, this could be something? What was that aha moment where you were like, this is a class project, but, it could be. And then all of a sudden you're like, this really, really could be something.
In the very, very early stages, we were tackling the problem of just students unable to make websites on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being in an elevator and talking to all the partners. Back then it was just me and my roommate, Giovanni Hobbins, and Pat Shea, someone in
the year above us. So were they? Kicked them out?
No, everyone's still involved. And Spencer Barkov has been involved from the beginning.
The very beginning, right?
No, yeah. Involved. It's really, we're all involved in a very interesting way.
How many people are on the team?
There's four co-founders, and then there is two other people that we've hired full-time, Xavier and Taggart.
So, and you got the, and this is all off the funding from the school?
Off the funding off the school.
You haven't convinced your parents to kick in?
Actually, we have. We begged and pleaded multiple times.
You know, the family, friends, and fools round? Have you done that yet?
We did that before we got the money from Emory. So they were really fools then because, no, I'm just kidding.
But so what kind of horsepower does this platform have? Can I share video and pictures and a rich media on this platform?
It's a rich media platform, exactly. So Basically, there's two sort of modes to the application, and it's an online app as well as a mobile app that we're working on. And sort of the first mode is public content, sort of like a university-wide bulletin board that's categorized. Mm-hmm. So things like classifieds, things like campus events.
What about like internships and
internships,
things
exactly.
like that?
Exactly. It's all organized. And then the other mode is sort of subgroups. So a fraternity would be able to create a bubble in this social network.
A bubble within the bubble,
a bubble
right?
within the bubble that the administrators can't even access.
Nice.
So it's a very... So it's really Emory saying, we realize that we need to provide this tool for students to be able to engage, mm-hmm. and we also need to be trusting of sort of, you know, letting the community sort of have its space when it needs it.
So now you guys and have access to a PR genius here. Do you have any questions for her?
How do we get on more radio stations?
How do we get to our next school?
All right, Lydia. Come on, you're on the spot.
Help them out, Lydia.
Well, you got to have a plan. Yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. You know, it doesn't happen by accident most of the time. You got to have a plan.
But you need an association. You need a users group that Lydia
is there a university association? An association of universities?
No, I don't. We don't have that one yet. Uh-huh. We don't have that one yet.
Maybe you'll start one, right?
Yeah,
you start associations too, I bet.
We do. We do, absolutely. But there's a great business community here. I mean, there's the... we actually have in our New York office, we have the Business Community Association. So,
mm-hmm. But like they have something that a lot of companies don't have. They have an affiliation with Emory University.
Mm-hmm.
So now, wouldn't that be the logical place to use Emory University to get your second one? Is there anybody in Emory that can open a door for you?
Yeah. They've already opened us a door. When we first launched, we were actually covered by the New York Times jointly with Emory. And the interesting story that a lot of press agencies are taking up is the relationship between the university and the students.
Right.
I believe this is the first time that a university has supported an undergraduate venture,
mm-hmm.
and for a for-profit business to be, you know, previously there's sort of two options to when you graduate college. You either go to grad school or you work for somebody.
Right.
And now universities are opening up.
They're incubating companies. Right. So now, does Emory have a more formal incubator program because of you guys?
Yeah, there's Spencer. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's mostly because of Spencer.
Well,
but yeah,
it seems like Spencer is very.
No, they're actually starting that right now. So because of our project and because of the funding, there's actually a tax force that's been created. The task force is realizing how they can use the different resources around campus to support entrepreneurship.
So what's it like working together? Because you guys were friends before this. Talk about how that relationship has evolved.
Yeah,
and
what if Spencer has like some crazy idea?
Well, we haven't killed each other yet, but there's actually four of us. We work out of our house, and we live
in our office.
We all live in the same house.
So financially, that had to happen. We live on the top floor, and our office is on the first floor, and the four founders live there. And on Friday night, we sort of don't see each other till Monday. Sort of what's going on right
that's
now.
That's a rule.
Yeah,
there's
going
to be a movie about this, and right. I expect this to be a scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Like we knew them when.
Yeah.
we'll cool call you that? Up and feature you.
That is awesome.
So now, is your main thing right now just kind of getting the infrastructure of the Emory bubble going, or are you actively pursuing other universities?
So Emory has been fortunate enough to introduce us already to other schools, and we're sort of holding back and developing a plan like we should. And we're creating materials. And basically what we're doing now is, you know, behind the scenes, we're doing a complete infrastructure overhaul in order to support, you know, thousands of simultaneous users.
So, all right, so is there any room for this bubble thing to – it makes perfect sense, the niche that you've chosen, the academic thing, but could you also, like, have a Coca-Cola bubble and a Home Depot bubble? And
association bubbles.
Association bubbles, right?
We need you.
All right, so you've thought about this before me mentioning it is what you're telling me.
We think about it a lot, and for me, I'm sort of the kind of guy that wants to tackle everything.
Right.
Yeah. But really what we've learned is sort of the laser focus is critically important, and I think what we're you know, one of the most exciting things is while we have a very strong relationship with Emory University to focus on that space and sort of a top 20 university helping us see the problems and then us being able to learn side by side with them. So it makes sense for us to continue to focus on that.
Right.
And meanwhile, we've been fortunate enough to find a potential strategic partner to sort of license the software out. So as other associations, for example, need their own bubble, have their own membership list to coordinate with, and you know,
can you talk about that strategic partnership? Is that top secret?
It's still in the works, but it's very promising and exciting, and you know, Emory has been involved in the process as mm-hmm. well. So we think it'll open a lot of doors for us.
So what do you need and want the most right now? Would you like to have access to more funding, or would you like to have access to more partners that could create more inroads, or are you pretty good and just leave you alone, let you do your thing, or what do you need?
So one of the most interesting things about our business model is the idea to sort of, we're an enterprise product, so the university takes a rate, but our idea is to eventually be a profit center for university, and sort of higher education is becoming, you know, it's a constantly evolving space. Mm-hmm. And so really we see an opportunity to engage the local economy and feature them in a way to the Emory community. So really something that we're looking for is lessons on how to engage local businesses and bring them to Emory in an organized, consolidated manner.
All right, Spencer, show me the money. Where's the money coming from? Where's the revenue?
So we estimate a price point at about $50,000 a school.
Okay, so the enterprise invested. The
enterprise
pays.
The school pays.
The school pays.
And why is it worth $50,000 plus?
He
to
just
them?
Said because it's a revenue generator.
I'm gonna have him and say it again.
Okay,
the man, he's gonna have to say this a lot in the coming months.
Yeah. So we talk about key benefits to the school. We talk about increasing recruitment yield because sort of students are gonna be drawn to the fact that they have their own social media tool, and because they're going to have a better awareness of, even before they arrive to campus, seeing what student organizations relate to them. So that's going to increase retention, recruitment. In terms of retention, we're going to get students more involved, you know, staff and faculty communicating more effectively.
And alumni, right?
And alumni reaching in. So that's a third benefit, is sort of once you get students involved in a virtual manner with their organizations while they're students, after they graduate, they continue to be involved through our platform.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, if my student organization that I was involved in, you know, is trying to put on an event and needs to raise money, as an alum, I'd be able to see what's going on and engage directly. So the third benefit to universities is a promise of increased alumni campaigns.
Yeah, so we're basically a software as a service selling a platform to a university, and which hopefully gets subsidized by the local economy.
Man, if I had my senior year to do again, I'd play a lot less ping pong.
I think that's a lesson.
Thinking now, about some of this.
Who's the coder?
So Pat Shea is in charge of coding, and he's
so you locked him in the basement of your house. That's where you keep him,
pretty much.
No, he's amazing. He'll work to deadline and then come to meetings when we need him to.
And he speaks English too.
Yeah, and we've hired two additional programmers. So we have a dev.
So that's a need now, right? You guys got to get sharp developers.
Yeah,
and we're very lucky, sort of, again, the Atlanta startup environment. You know, you go to meetups and you can find programmers, and Taggart Xavier especially. You know, it's not like we can offer the best dollar in the world, but the culture here is to help each other out because, you know, you work on one project, you learn from that, and sort of how it opens doors.
Now, did you get business advisors that did they kind of help you formulate the corporation, and how much do you have to give to developers to get them to work for free, and you know, you have that kind of business set up too?
Yeah, I mean, the business school has been huge for us. They've introduced us to people who are in the space, and we've actually just offered one of our advisors our first board seat, and they've been, you know, very influential in our business and helping us develop those types of plans.
Right.
We have quarterly meetings with them. We had an advisor roundtable actually at Emory's business school right before launch to make sure we were on the right path. So can't say enough about Emory and the business school and what they've done for us.
Do they need a PR firm? Because I know somebody.
Yeah, I think so. Moving forward, I think
so maybe you can connect them with Lydia.
Absolutely.
To make that happen?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, best way to get more information for you guys, website?
We're definitely encouraging everyone to check out Emory Bubble because it's really inspiring. So emorybubble.com, and it has our contact information there. Additionally, my personal email is near at thecampusbubble.com.
So is that another URL for you guys, The Campus Bubble?
The Campus. We're sort of in the Facebook stage, same thing. So soon enough, we'll get rid of the.
All right.
When we can afford the domain name.
Somebody beat you to it?
No, it's out there. We just can't. Yeah. We're working on it.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. Thank you to all of our guests. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.